It's 10:30, and you're tuned to KBOO Portland. Actually, it's 10:29. That following program, Health Watch, was made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Food Front Cooperative Grocery, specializing in foods from local and organic producers. Food Front is located in Northwest Portland at 24th and Northwest Thurman. For more information, the number is 503-222-5658. And the upcoming program, The Dirt Bag, featuring Glenn Andreessen, talking about seeds this morning. His program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a nursery located near Molalla, Oregon, offering hard-to-find plants designed to help you grow your own fruit and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. For a color catalog, the number is 503-651-3005, and the email address is catalog@onegreenworld.com.
Good morning, Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 11 o'clock. Welcome to The Dirt Bag, a program dedicated to the proposition that while we may be able to speed up nature and change nature, that we cannot improve it. Indeed, it's the second Monday. Today, to begin this new year, let's talk about seeds and seed companies, seed catalogs, and also some things that are happening. I will be continuing my year-long series of lecture and tour at Garden Fever. Starts at 24th and Fremont. And the date in question here is February 4th. That's a Saturday at 10. So it starts there at Garden Fever Nursery for a 45-minute lecture or so. And then we adjourn to my garden for hands-on, or at least eyes-on, to talk about certain things that I may have covered in the lecture or other things, and topics that I will talk about and or demonstrate include grape pruning. If you have new grapes, it can be, or old grape vines, it might even be more intimidating on what to do for best production there. And I've had the best teacher, old trial and error, and producing now very well, and I'm satisfied with the method of pruning that I've chosen to go. There are a couple of main ways that we'll talk about there. Maybe we'll cover some of that in the next Dirt Bag, too. Also, so that's on February 4th, Saturday. Let me give you the number. It's a free event, of course, and the Garden Fever number, because registration is required, but it is free, 503-287-3200. So that's 287-3200. Also, at the end of this month, the 28th, 29th, there's going to be compost bins available for inexpensive, and they will be at the Division Store of Portland Nursery. I'll be there Saturday afternoon to talk about composting. And there they will have the compost bin that Metro has been selling for about 10 years. And I can also mention that I just got word that Metro will not be having the one-day bin sale like they've had for the last 8 years, something like that. But they instead will have them year-round at the paint distribution center that Metro operates on Swan Island, excuse me, just at the bottom of the hill as you turn on to the Basin Avenue. It's just to the left there, kind of in the little island there between all the highways or the roads. So that'll be available year-round, which is probably a pretty good deal, although that means people might have to travel a little bit longer. But $35, not a bad price for that Earth machine. Not my favorite bin, but nevertheless, a great bin for beginners or average to small yards. So those are a few things that I'll be doing, and I invite you to join me in those. I also invite you to join the conversation today about seed starting or any questions that you may have. I've been getting quite a few questions lately on compost and would be happy to continue that at the KBOO number, 503-231-8187. So now's your chance, too. The topic at hand for the day is which seeds to start when, at least in these winter months. And there aren't a lot that would or should be started in January, but this is the time to be gathering your implements and ordering seeds from seed catalogs, or they'll be getting seeds into the nurseries at some point. But I'll tell you a few of my favorite seed catalogs. We'll start with the two main local ones, Territorial Seed Company, which has a fine selection. They're not all organic seeds, but that more and more are becoming organic, and they are located out of Cottage Grove, Oregon, and a very nice catalog. And also Nichols Seed Catalog, or Nichols Seed, out of Albany, Oregon. And there are other small seed companies in Oregon. Down in southern Oregon, there are many, and the one in Corvallis that we had the opportunity to visit as part of the Food Show Collective, I went with them on that. That was last fall. And gosh darn it, I cannot remember the name of that company. Tammy, do you remember that one? Tammy doesn't remember either. Bountiful Seeds or something like that, maybe. But I'm sure if you do a search for Corvallis Seed Company, Alan Capular, you'll find it. They're not a huge variety there, but the ones that are available do well in the Willamette Valley and are some of Alan's favorites. So another moving nationwide now, probably the best that many of the community-supported agriculture people and nurseries support and buy from is Fedco Seeds, F-E-D-C-O. Fedco Seeds out of Maine, and they've got a 100-page catalog or so that can be downloaded from their website. I had a good look at that this morning, and they have a wide variety of seeds, many organic, many open-pollinated, and, of course, some hybrids. You know, hybrid is not necessarily a dirty word in the organic world at all. It is not even remotely related to genetic engineering or modified seeds. It's just taking nature and, as I mentioned in the opening, speeding it up. That's all. And hopefully the crosses that come about from that will be more disease resistant or bigger or more tastier, et cetera, et cetera. So the many companies only deal with heirloom seeds, and I believe the Seeds of Change does that out of the South. I think New Mexico is where it, the last I remember it being. And then also one that Tammy reminded me of today, the Seed Savers Exchange out of Decorah, Iowa. And Tammy bought, actually used a gift certificate to get some seeds out of there. And what a great gift idea. A gift certificate to a seed company for the gardener in your life. And finally, one, and there are many seed companies, gosh, don't hold me to giving all of them. I mean, you know the jokes about the seed catalogs in your mailbox, just overwhelming the mailbox, not to mention the letter carrier. In any event, Peaceful Valley Farm Supply out of California, an organic company, a collective of organic growers there who has a great catalog that will give you information not only on seeds, but all types of gardening information, including cover crops, what the benefits of those are, et cetera, and equipment, et cetera. And all of those, of course, can be found on the Internet. So, but let's get to the business at hand here. And once again, let me remind you, I invite your calls today, 503-231-8187. KBOOers probably know that one by heart, even though I don't. Okay, so January does not bring necessarily a whole lot of opportunity for planting seeds, although there are certain things that can get started outside, but they do need to be protected somehow. For example, yes, you can plant radishes now, believe it or not, but it should be undercover. We've had some fairly mild weather, above average temperatures now, finally, although some more normal or average temperatures, we might say, later on this week is forecast into the mid-30s. The average low for this time at the Portland Airport in any event is 34, so we're well above that, and the average high is 45. The problem with cold temperatures is that it's just hard to get the seeds germinated. And when the seeds don't germinate, then they tend to rot. You can save yourself a lot of aggravation if you plant on time there. So radish can be planted under cover. About this time, too, you can plant onion sets in mulch, which is different. These little sets are different than seeds. These are the little tiny bulblets that are probably the size of a dime, maybe a nickel in some cases, and they can be planted outside, but they need to be covered under mulch. Towards the end of this month, many of the greens can be started inside. Not so many of the greens, but arugula can be started also. Parsley, scallions, and onions can be started inside for planting outside later. The key with onions in this area is to plant them early enough so that they can be grown and planted outside early enough so that we can get lots of green growth before the weather, or more accurately, the daylight length changes such that they are triggered to start putting more of their energy into growing a bulb. And the more green you have, that will lead to more or bigger onion bulbs. So I generally begin my onions in mid-February or so for planting out in April, generally. And no, that's Tammy asked for clarification here. These are the seeds. I will start the seeds indoors and then transplant them out later when they get to, 3 to 5 inches. But I noticed, or I remember from Territorial, they'll say that if you can't plant them out, the onion seeds that have grown into little seedlings, if you can't plant them the ideal size is about 3 inches, so anything more than that, cut them off is what they recommend. I've never done that, and I don't know that it's really necessary. And if they're getting huge, then yes, but not just kind of general type size. 3 to 4 inches would be fine. And we can talk more about that in the spring when the actual time to transplant them out comes. But that's how I plant all my onions. It's a bit painstakingly tedious, but you can space them as you like them, and there's what has come up. You know, that reminds me of one thing that I'll mention before we get to our first call, and that's, how long does seed last? Well, it depends how it's been stored and just what the general tendency of seed is. For example, onions and corn generally has a seed life of only 1 year. And so if it's not planted for that year and it's stored just in its seed packet in your garage or something, then it's unlikely that they will germinate later on. However, if they're stored in more ideal conditions, they can last much longer. And what are those ideal conditions? The rule of thumb is the temperature plus the humidity should be less than 100. So if you were to keep them on your I don't know, above your kitchen refrigerator there, the temperature probably never drops below 55, the top of the refrigerator, and the humidity is probably 70 in your house, 60 to 70 maybe. Well more than 100, so that's not ideal storage. So it doesn't take much to put them in a plastic bag or a glass jar would probably be better. Put some packets of desiccant in there that you might receive or get in a vitamin bottle or someplace. And put them in the fridge. It's a great way to get long-term storage. I've still got seeds, tomato seeds particularly, that go back 8 to 10 years, and they're still viable. And what I was going to say, and then we'll take this call, I lied to you, I guess, that one way to test the viability of your seed is to pre-sprout them. And to do that, you put 10 seeds, usually, in a paper towel, well, maybe moisten the paper towel first, put it in a bag, plastic bag, and put it in a warm space, which could be on top of your refrigerator or freezer or just any place that's not going to get too cold in your living area, and see how many of those seeds germinate. And if you get, for example, 6 of those seeds to germinate, you can assume you have about a 60% germination rate, and you can then seed those accordingly. Now, many people pre-sprout seeds in that method, and then they go ahead and plant those seeds outside, including peas and beans and corn even. And as I mentioned earlier, that getting the seed to germinate is the main hurdle to overcome in the early spring. Now, particularly here in Oregon, we tend to have some cooler springs than we would like. So that's a good deal there. All right, let's see what one dirtbagger has to say. Good morning, you're with the Dirtbag.
Yes, hi. My name's Lincoln, and I live in Portland, and I have a whole bunch of tulip bulbs and narcissus bulbs that I have not yet planted out, and I'm wondering, is it too late, or can I still sneak them in the ground?
Well, of course you can sneak them in at any time. Whether they'll grow or produce flowers is another question. They will grow. There's no doubt about that they will grow. It's the will they flower?
And, will they flower, yeah.
Right, and my guess is yes, they would.
They will still, even the narcissus.
Well,
they're kind of sprouting right now. I mean, right. Some of them are sprouting, you know, right now.
Well, it's not going to take you long for this experiment. You know, just go out there and stick them in.
Stick them in the ground and see what happens, huh?
Right, you don't have anything to lose. Because I can guarantee you that if you don't plant them, they're not going to sprout, or they're not going to make flowers in your garage or wherever they are.
Right.
But if you put them in the ground, they will form another bulb for the following year, even if they don't flower this year.
Okay.
Because
do you like to use cages, or is that a little? Is that
cages for the bulbs or above?
For the bulbs themselves.
To protect them from mice or voles, are you thinking?
Yeah, or gophers or, you know, any kind of thing.
Well, it depends where you live in Portland.
Southeast.
I mean, if it's
outer.
You might have problems with moles. I mean, you'd know if you had a moles problem. But the moles, the Townsend mole, which is the mole that we have around here, is not a plant eater.
Oh.
It's a meat eater. And so it eats grubs, you know, young beetles and earthworms and such. And so it's not going to bother your bulbs. However, it might tunnel by or near them, and in which case then voles, the meadow mice, or even city mice, we'll call them, they can come by and start nibbling on those bulbs. But it's not a secondary a problem.
Okay, yeah, we don't seem to have any evidence of moles or gophers to any great extent that I noticed. It just seems like it would be one more impediment for me getting him in the ground in an expeditious manner.
That is an excellent attitude. You know, that's I've lived in Northeast for 18 years and have never had a problem with anything eating my bulbs or anything underground.
Okay.
You know, plenty of above ground stuff, but not underground. So do it.
All right. Well,
you know, we have a saying here in the biz that the best time to plant a fruit tree is 20 years ago. You know, and I could say, well, the best time to plant your daffodils is, you know, in the fall. But the second best time is today. So
excellent, excellent.
Get on it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You bet. All right. Are we going again? Yes. All right. Good morning, Dirtbag listener.
Yes, hi. I'm using one of those Metro-provided compost...
Earth machines?
Earth machine, if that's what you could call it, I guess.
Well, that's the name of it. Why, I don't know.
And I have a question about the quality of the compost. I'm composting mostly food garbage with a little bit of plant material in the form of fine wood chips and some leafy matter layered in between the food garbage. I'm getting a compost that looks good, lots of worms in it, so on and so forth. And I'm putting it, I have been for the last 5 years or so, putting it in a concrete planter where I plant a garden. And the result that I get leads me to believe that there's some kind of a problem with the soil nutrient level or something. Tomatoes seem to do reasonably well, but other plants like squash and certainly carrots don't do very well. And I'm wondering, is it just a rule of thumb that when I use that kind of compost that I need to use lime? And if so, what kind of lime? Is there different kinds of lime, or is that just a very simple additive that you can get anywhere?
Well, I need to ask you some questions first about your planter. You said it's a concrete planter. How old is the concrete planter?
Oh, gosh, it's probably 40, 50 years old.
Okay, all right. That's not a problem, because sometimes fresh compost can... complicate the soil pH.
I put the compost in about a month before I plant the garden.
Okay. How deep is it?
Not very deep. It's probably the deepest. It's kind of a raised rock wall situation, and the deepest part of it is probably maybe a foot to a foot and a half deep.
Is there a bottom?
Evidently not, because I'm getting molds in there from time to time.
And they're coming from underneath then?
Yes.
Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you have mostly, it sounds like, is vermicompost. That is to say, worm compost. Because you said you have lots of worms, and you're putting in mostly food scraps.
Right.
With a little bit of wood chips, and you said you have lots of worms in there.
Right.
And what percentage would you say is of compost versus soil when you plant?
I would say, since it's a fairly long planter, it's probably 30 feet long. Probably the ratio is no more than, I would say, 30% compost to 70% soil.
Okay. I mean, some people would say that you can't have too much compost. You can't put in too much compost. And I would tend to agree with that, unless it's a somewhat artificial situation, and that's what you have here. You know, it's a raised bed, and so all the soil that's there... or all the plant's needs are mostly up to you. I mean, it can't go, I mean, it could go somewhat down there.
Yeah.
But too much compost, or if it was straight compost, the water tends to just run right through it. Mm-hmm. I've done some experiments with that, and, you know, too much of a good thing is a bad thing, I guess, in the case of compost. That being 100%. 30%, I wouldn't think there's a problem there. I also wouldn't think that there would be a fertility problem, but there could be. Do you add nitrogen?
I don't add anything but the compost, and I have used steer compost over the years. I've mixed that in from time to time, but last year I didn't do any of that. I just used the straight food compost.
Bagged steer manure?
Yes.
Yeah, the nutrient content, if you look at those bags, is pretty paltry. You know, more it's almost like a 1.5, you know, one being the nitrogen, not very much at all.
Okay.
What I would recommend is to try a small amount of organic fertilizer, particularly maybe a little bit higher nitrogen than the other two numbers.
Okay. So you're leaning more towards nitrogen than lime then, it sounds like.
Right. The compost tends to have a higher pH, which lime would do too.
Okay.
Although if you're going to add lime, and in fact you may want to, but it should be calcitic lime, which is also known as ag lime, which has mostly calcium rather than calcium and magnesium. Generally, we want lots of calcium and not very much magnesium. But if you add dolomite lime, it's got both. And you'd be better just to add the calcium.
Okay.
Or save your eggshells.
I've done some of that, too.
All right. Do all of it.
All right. But you're saying nitrogen is something I should look at, then?
if you're not adding any nitrogen to the soil, then yes, because that's that is a major nutrient needed. Now, I'm not talking about lots of it, but enough. The plant needs it. And our soils around here generally are low in nitrogen. And this is it's not an about face for me or from me, but this past year I started using more fertilizer as a side dresser. That is to say, after the plant was growing, just sprinkling a half a cup of organic fertilizer around each plant. And it made a big difference, because I just don't think I was supplying all of my nutrient needs through compost and cover cropping.
That's my impression, my gut level feeling is that's what my problem is. Now, do you have a recommendation for a particular product of organic fertilizer I could get?
There's a lot of companies that have pre-mixed boxes or bags of it even, so
right.
I think just take your pick.
Is there a ratio? Because I know some of that stuff have, you know, they're 16-1-1 and all this kind of stuff.
That's not organic.
Oh, okay, that's
not
organic.
Yeah, you will never find find anything over 8 or 9 at the highest if it's organic.
Okay,
so
all right.
You're pretty good there.
Thank you.
Great. All right, let's keep the phones going. Here we go. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Glenn.
Yes.
Are you certain about the Townsend's moles being strictly carnivorous? Because I haven't witnessed it myself because they're underground, but I've had terrible damage in carrot beds when moles have been moving through it.
Yes, but I should never say never, should I? Or I should never say always. What I would suspect is that the voles have followed those moles, because I've had the exact same thing with potatoes, beets, and carrots. It's kind of comical to look at a beet, you know, that's completely hollowed out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that I have voles, because when I weed whip the meadow down, you know, there's tons of them. And plus, you may have read this past year that the voles were a terrible problem in the valley.
Hmm.
Maybe not this year.
One time I witnessed, and of course, and this was from above ground, something grabbed a hole of the end of a garlic leaf above the ground. This is before I was there.
Uh-huh.
And had pulled it down, in other words, looped it. And
as I
watched, it pulled the whole leaf down into the ground. It disappeared.
That's like a cartoon.
It was. It was amazing.
All right.
But, I mean, it's possible it's the voles. You're right.
Yeah, well, I'll check on that. But, you know, I researched this 8 or 10 years ago, and that's what sticks with me. So
I'll
let you know.
What I ended up doing was putting hardware cloth on the bottom of my carrot boxes.
And that worked?
That has worked great.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Right,
Thanks. One more call. Good. Good morning. Talk to me.
Good morning. I got a question about chicken manure.
All right.
I've got a neighbor. I'm an organic gardener, and I've got a neighbor who's got some chicken manure that's about, it's probably about 3 years old, the pile she's got now. But it's not from an organic place, and I'm real hesitant to put it on my organic garden. Can you tell me about that?
Well, as far as I know, you know, chickens are not pumped full of. Well, it depends what kind of a chicken. Do you know what the chicken farm was like? I mean, it was a family, you know, a few
just
chickens.
Just a plain old regular family one, but I don't think they were organic at all, and I'm wondering about how long does that chemical stuff sit in there?
Well, it depends what we're...
It's not like a foster farm kind of place, but...
It's not, or it is?
It's not.
Okay, right. I would tend to, since it's 3 years old, I would tend to think that it would be fine, that there would be no health concerns or environmental concerns about it. The main concern from getting manure from commercial farms of any type are what kind of antibiotics and things, hormones are used in the, are pumped into the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt that's the case if it's a family farm.
Just in case it is a bigger place like that, you wouldn't put stuff like that on something organic, no matter how many years it's been then.
Unless I knew what the source of it was, no.
Yeah. Okay, and if you get time, one more quick question. I've got a big old herb garden in a brick planter that's about 2 feet deep. It's been out there for years, and I'm thinking of just pulling all my herbs up out of it and, putting in all new soil and everything. Is that a good idea? I mean, they're just kind of looking a little bit wispier this year.
Well,
I haven't been doing a lot of top dressing some. What time of year should I do it, and is it a good idea?
I'm just going to have to give you a 20-second response here. Herbs are different because for those you want to torture herbs so that they so they don't grow much, so they concentrate those oils in the leaves.
Huh.
So you don't want to be, you know, really top dressing them and getting great new growth on your rosemary or whatever it happens to be, because you want strong leaves. I mean, if anybody's ever, do you have enough of your herbs?
Oh, yeah. I've got plenty of them out there, and they're looking very good.
Okay, so I would say in this case it's a little different. Although soil, you may want to, replace some of the soil occasionally, too.
Okay, so a little top dressing here and there is okay, and that's...
Oh, yeah, always put compost down.
All right.
But not necessarily fertilizer.
Okay, great. Compost I got.
Okay.
Thanks
go
so
for
much.
It, then. You bet. All right, well, we didn't get to a whole lot of the plants, but there's not a whole lot of seeding to be done in January, and I'll try to pick that up again in February. Hope to see you on the 4th at Garden Fever, and I thank you for listening. Be well.
It's 11 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 or on the web at radiocab.net.